On this day in 1773, the first Jewish settlers arrived in Savannah. They founded what is now the oldest Jewish congregation in the South. Nearly two centuries later, Savannah again became a refuge for Jewish immigrants. Author Jonathan Rabb explores this difficult transition in his novel, Among the Living. The book is set in 1947, when concentration camp survivor Yitzhak Golden travels to Savannah. His new life in Georgia demands that he face complex divisions within Savannah's Jewish community. Author Jonathan Rabb joined my colleague Celeste Headley in 2014 to talk more about his book.
I have to be honest with you that when they handed me this book to read for this interview, the first thing I thought was, oh God, another novel about Holocaust survivors. But I was surprised, because what you have landed on is a subject that I just don't think I've ever read about before, which is the difficulty that survivors had even relating with their own Jewish community, that even among the Jews, they didn't know what to say to survivors. How did you come to this particular subject matter?
Well, it's funny. I mean, so many people have said it's a Holocaust novel. I don't look at it that way. I moved down to Savannah. You know, I didn't know anything about Southern Jewry at the time. I'd grown up in the Northeast. And so I felt like an outsider. So I needed to bring a character there who also didn't know anything about Southern Jewry. And it just made sense to me to bring someone at that time. I've always done historical fiction, to a place where there was a fractured Jewish community. And yes, his experience is the Holocaust in the past, but it's someone who is trying to find his way through that. And when he gets to Savannah, this division in the Jewish community between the Reform and Conservative is sort of absurd to him, because these sorts of things don't make sense. And even a character in the book at one point says, we know this must be absurd to you, but it's who we are. And finding the difficulty in explaining an experience that no one who didn't go through that experience could have, whether they were Jew or non-Jew, is going to make it very, very difficult for him. And that's why later in the book, I bring in another character who has survived a concentration camp as well. And she is a very, very different voice. He is able to find his way through. I mean, he does come back to the living. She, I'm not so sure. And she has a very powerful line at one point where she says to him in the book, these people will never understand you, and you will never understand them. And she doesn't say it to demean, to in any kind of judgmental
way. No, she's
way.
Just...
It's the truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of the choice.
And
for
he doesn't
him,
argue with her either.
No, of course not. Of course not. But he's been there longer than she has. And of course, he has found someone in the Jewish community, although he's in the conservative community, the woman he falls
yeah,
in love
like
with
a Romeo
is reformed.
And Juliet.
Sure, sure,
yeah.
sure. My wife was very happy that I finally, in one of my books, have a love story. although I made it tough on him, so that's just me. But, you know, he has a very different experience. But, you know, I had a cousin who, in fact, I dedicate the book to my great uncle and aunt and cousin, who all miraculously survived the war. And my cousin was only 9 years old when he was in a camp. And I would see him from, moved to New York, he was there, and we would have breakfast many, many mornings. And he was an accountant, he was living a normal life, but you could see that there was something obviously that was still shattered inside. And
this part was very interesting to me, because nobody knows what to say to him, Yitzhak. It's almost as though he himself doesn't know what they should be saying. But that doesn't necessarily have to be the Holocaust. It just reminded me of pretty much anyone who's lived through a horrific tragedy of some kind.
Any kind of trauma. What are you supposed to, and you have your sort of list of things. There's a scene in the book where people start asking him, what was it like? And internally, he's thinking to himself, you know, all right, here are the questions. I'll answer them the way I usually do. And at a certain point, they get to the question, and inside he said, in his head, he says, here it comes. I know it's going to come. And the question always is, how could you have not known? How could you have not gotten out? And, you know, that I think is one of the questions that people always ask of people going through traumas. And I always bring up the example of I was living in New York with my wife in 2001. And walking down the streets in August, none of us were thinking to ourselves, gosh, you know, in about a month, the whole world is going to change. You're not aware of these epic things that are going on, and history just sort of moves you along. How could you not know? How could you not get out? It's almost a nonsensical question at a certain point, and yet you have to answer it. And, you know, he's still just trying to find his way. And I think you sort of turn on an automatic pilot at a certain point to confront those kinds of questions, I think. At least he did. That was the character I created.
How did you go about figuring that out, though? I mean, what kind of research do you do to get inside the mind of a trauma victim? Because I've never been through that kind of trauma.
Sure.
So I would have no idea what that experience would be like.
Well, I mean, obviously, I projected a lot onto my cousin, who was my father's generation. And, you know, but this was years ago. I had the idea to write a book with him as, not him, but a character like that. But I was living in New York at the time, and it just seemed too obvious to set this kind of story in New York. When we moved down to Savannah about 8 years ago, and I, as I said, I needed an outsider, suddenly there was this confluence of ideas that I'd had for a long time, and they came together. You know, projecting onto someone I knew, but also there are many, many beautiful books out there. I'm a huge fan of, if one can be, but I think he's a beautiful writer, is Primo Levi. And his, you know, Survival in Auschwitz and any number of the books, both fiction and nonfiction, are extraordinary because you read these books, especially Survival in Auschwitz, and there isn't an element of judgment going on. And that to me is fascinating. He simply depicts what it was like to be in that concentration camp very, very vividly. But he never takes out, you know, his knife to take back against the Nazis. It's extraordinary what he could do. And it's this wonderful stillness within him. And I wanted to give that to my character, which means he's a very quiet character. And that was the bigger challenge because in fiction, people want big, you know, characters that dominate a scene, and he's not that. And
we never get the full story of what happened to him, either.
No, and I don't think anybody ever will. Even the woman I don't want to give anything away, but, you know, the woman he falls in love with, she never fully finds out. And I think it's a sweet moment between them where she says to him at one point, she said, I always thought that you didn't speak that much because of the language. But no, you're wonderful at English. It's something else. And that's true. And yet he is able to open up to her in some ways. But I think opening up about those things fully means you have to relive them fully. And I don't think anybody wants to do that, especially him.
If you're just joining us, my guest is author Jonathan Rabb. His new novel is called Among the Living. It's set in Savannah after World War II. There's a lot of resonances to this story. First of all, we get in a racism with the African-American characters that are in there. What kind of research did you have to do to recreate Savannah of 1947?
Well, it's one of the most fun I've ever had because in my books, the previous books that I'd done, it take place in Berlin in 1919, 27, Spain in 36. You know, there are people I could have interviewed, but no one, you know, very, very few. This book, I became very, very friendly with a man who unfortunately passed away a few years ago at the age of 97. And he and I became very friendly. He said, I'm going to set up a lunch for you. And I went to the lunch at his house, and there were six people there. I think I probably brought the average age down to about 89. And, you know, I came with a legal pad filled with questions, ready to go. We sat down, I asked the first question, and I didn't speak for the next 3 hours. It was incredible. These members of the Jewish community, both the Reform and the Conservative, And they just started talking to each other about that time. And it was as if they were transported back there and I was there with them. And in fact, I stole one of the names. One of the crucial character in the book is the housekeeper for the Jesslers, the people he comes to live with. Her name is Mary Royal. Well, that was one of the names of one of these women's housekeepers. And I loved that touch of royal. It was just wonderful because on some level, you mentioned that, you know, issues of racism come up. The African-American community on some level is the moral compass in this book for the simple reason that, you know, Yitzhak can't possibly understand what it is to be an African-American man, a black man living in the Jim Crow South. But he can certainly hear echoes of his own recent past and the way they're continuing to be treated, so much so that he begins to feel a greater affinity for the black community than even for his own family.
And more comfortable.
Well, I mean,
in some ways.
There's a moment where he's sort of driving down the street with this lovely young man named Raymond. And, you know, things happen to Raymond in the book. They're talking, and it just is very clear that Raymond is telling him, you know, next time, don't extend your hand to shake my hand. You know, just don't do that. And Yitzhak sort of sits back and thinks to himself, how easy is it to now be on the other side of this? I mean, it's just extraordinary. So he has to be able to see that experience, even though he obviously can't have known what it is to be living in the South as a black man at the time.
And to some extent, the book is about the fact that we can't really know what it's like to be anybody else.
No.
That everybody's experiences mean that we can't truly understand them.
Right. But even, yes, the Jews in Savannah can't possibly know what it is to, you know, to be. It's, we are alone on some level with those big ideas, and we have to process them ourselves, even though there are people around who you think, obviously those people will understand it, but they can't. All they can do is open their arms and say, we're here. What else can we do? And on some level, Yitzhak begins to do that, as do the Jesslers, for the black community in Savannah, as best as they can, given the time. It's not perfect. This book doesn't end on a
little
bow. I mean, it's 1947 Savannah. I mean, one of the other things as I wrote the book, and I discovered this as I wrote the book, you know, growing up, I always knew about the relationship between the African-American community and the Jewish community during civil rights. It's both a positive and a troubling relationship and so forth, but it didn't just spring up. It had to have come from somewhere. So having a story that takes place in 1947, I needed to see if there were kernels of that beginning to bubble just beneath the surface, as I said, in Savannah. And I think there were between those two communities. But again, there were the limitations of the time.
So there's other resonances, certainly, to modern times. I mean, if you think about the state of not just racism, but look at the refugee crisis at this point. In what ways did you feel as though you were writing? I mean, you specialize in historical novels, and yet in a way, a successful historical novel needs to be timeless, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
How much is that in your head while you're writing?
It's a great question. I don't think those questions can be in your head. You have to, as a novelist, this is the difference between being a historian and being a novelist.
Yeah.
You know, as a novelist, I have to live in the moment with my characters. They have to make their choices. I tell my students, if you try and write about the big ideas, you know, this book is about identity and alienation, and so you'll bore the reader beyond measure, and you'll never get to what really makes characters human, what really makes the story, as you say, universal. You've got to deal with the moment to moment and the things that matter to them. I mean, history is the backdrop, but you're dealing with intimate lives, small lives, and those have to, you know, pulse with their own, what motivates them as individuals, small choices. Do we go to this dinner? Do we not? At the same time, as you step back from the actual writing of the book and get more into, you know, the moments that you're away, you know, you do see these bigger ideas. But if you heavy pedal them too much, you become a pedant. You just are sort of up on your soapbox trying to teach people something, and they won't connect to it. They've got to connect to the individual characters. And then, hopefully, you know, the reader will put two and two together, and then you'll get that kind of resonance at the end of the book. I started writing this book, you know, 2-3 years ago. And even though this is still, you know, these issues still challenge us, it's really been in the last year and a half that things have exploded so much, especially in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't anticipate that. But these are issues that aren't going away. And I'm not going to say that I sat down and said, I'm going to write about this. But I don't think you can live in this country and not recognize that those are the issues that are there. And I don't, as I said, I didn't write a Holocaust book. I don't think I'm writing historical fiction. I know that sounds weird. But I think I'm just, I found characters, I found a moment that makes sense to me. And it must make sense to me because of the moment that I'm living in. I mean, I'm not just going back to paint you a picture of something pretty in the past. I'm drawn to it because obviously I have concerns, you know, my own anxieties about those issues. I just happen to find my characters in the moment in the past.
That was author Jonathan Rapp, who joined my colleague Celeste Headlee in 2015. And that's our show for today. Do you know the story of how your people first got to Georgia? We want to hear it. Give us a call at 404-500-9457. And you can post on Facebook or reach us on Twitter. The show is at OST Talk. For today, that's on Second Thought from GPB News. Have a great day.